Yeah, V-Day not looking good this year.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by BasketballMonster.com. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster, and you can find me on Twitter as always at RedRock_Beeble. We're going to recap Monday's action. We're going to preview Tuesday's DFS slate. We're going to look at the blockbuster trade that went down between the Brooklyn Nets and the Milwaukee Bucks, and we're going to shine that player spotlight on the rooster, Danilo Gallinari of the LA Clippers. So lots to talk about. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Yeah, great idea. We will start by talking about that trade that went down today. I reckon we'll spend max 2 minutes talking about it. It was the Brooklyn Nets sending Tyler Zeller over to the Milwaukee Bucks in exchange for a second-round draft choice and Rashard Vaughn. Both of these players, Vaughn and Zeller, were out of their respective rotations. They move into situations where they might not even see playing time at all. The Nets, I don't know what the Bucks are doing, and I'm not sure, you know, what they're doing giving up a second-round pick for a guy like Zeller unless they have the intention of playing him over Thon McCur, and that would then garner you a little bit of value maybe in a 20-team league, maybe in something deeper, a 30-team league. And obviously limiting what McCur can do. Thon has been disappointing this season. Had a few moments, specifically against the Raptors, but disappointing in general in most of his games. So maybe they are going to play Zeller as that backup center. But at this point, it looks like he's going to be the third stringer. They didn't have another center on the roster, and that's where Zeller's going to fit. Vaughn moves over to Brooklyn, and he's going to be behind Spencer Dinwiddie, D'Angelo Russell, Alan Crabb, Caris LeVert, Jumpin' Joe Harris, and Nick Stauskas. So he is not going to see the court. He's one of those players who had his rookie option declined. So the Nets, even if he does ball out and if he starts playing awesome, they can't offer him any more than what he was supposed to get in the fourth year of that rookie deal. Anyway, the exact same situation as the Jahlil Okafor trade. So basically, they did this deal to get that second-round pick. Vaughn is going to have zero value. Zeller's going to have zero value. He's not going to be impacting John Henson, the Muppet, not going to be impacting his minutes. And so many people, when I put this tweet out saying this just does the biggest bunch of nothing for fantasy, oh man, it makes Jarrett Allen better. No, it doesn't affect Jarrett Allen at all, because Jarrett Allen was already the starting center. He was already a must-own player, and Tyler Zeller was literally not even playing. He was out of the rotation. So what Zeller was doing, what Allen was doing for the last three games, nothing changes. Jarrett Allen's the starting center, Jahlil Okafor's the backup center, and when Rondae Hollis-Jefferson comes back, he'll play some center, and it will also push Quincy Acey across to play a little bit of backup five. Zeller and Mozgov were literally not even playing for the Nets, so it doesn't do anything for Allen's minutes. He's going to be in that 26 to 28 minute range, I would say, for the majority of the season. He was a clear must-own, as we talked about him on yesterday's program, and now nothing changes. It doesn't, unless you were of the opinion that the Nets were going to reverse course and start Tyler Zeller over Jarrett Allen, which there was, I can assure you, 100% chance of that not happening. That was never going to happen, because once bad teams decide, you know what, we're ready for our rookie to start, they don't start them 10 games and go, oh, you know what, let's take them back. That just doesn't happen. Marquese Chris was shithouse all of last season, but once they made that decision to start him, they just kept going with it. They just don't, especially when we get into February, they won't make that change. They won't put Allen in and say, oh, you know what, we better put Tyler Zeller back in. That just wasn't going to be something that happened. Nothing changes for Allen. He was a must-own bloke yesterday. He's a must-own bloke today. The value pretty much remains the same for big Jarrett Allen, and Rashard Vaughn has no impact at all. I spoke about that trade for way too long. A weird one from the Bucks. The Nets find themselves, literally anybody could have signed Tyler Zeller. He was signed late in the summer, and they turned him into a second-round draft choice. So kudos once again goes to Shawnee Marks. The monstrous line of the night for Monday, it goes to Rocket Rodney Hood, who had 30 points with 4 triples, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. But I preach a level of caution with this performance from Rocket, because as I talked about when he was the player spotlight guy a week or so ago, that all his value is coming from points. He's just not doing anything in the steals and rebounds and assists, and not doing enough there. And pretty much the same thing here. A high-scoring night, a la the future MVP Kyle Kuzma, but on 12 of 14 shooting, clearly that's an unreasonable expectation to go 86% from the field, which is what he did in this game. Now, still, he should be owned in most situations. He's the 104th-ranked player for the year, averaging almost 17 points and 2.7 threes, but just very little value in any other category. Under 3 rebounds, 1.7 assists, 0.8 steals, subpar field goals, and yeah, the free throws are nice, but it's only on 2 attempts at 87%, so it has a marginal impact. Should be owned, but if you're not looking for points and threes, he's just not helping you really in any other area, and maybe someone else, maybe it is someone like Larry Nance who works better for your team because they're providing rebounds and field goal percentage and steals and blocks. It's never as simple, oh, is it Rocket or is it Nance or is it Rocket or is it The Undertaker or whoever the player is. It really is, these guys have a significant differences in their value, especially waiver wire guys. They might have 2-3 positive categories and they might be completely opposite to the other guy. And a guy like Rocket, this is who he is, really. He's not going to start all of a sudden going out there and averaging 20 points with 7 rebounds and 5 assists and 2 steals. He's just not that sort of a player. He can score. He's going to be streaky. He's going to have injury problems. This was great to see, but it's not the start of this spectacular run. Again, 86% shooting is not a realistic aim for him for the rest of the season, and I'm sure that every single person that listens to this podcast is well aware of that fact. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Bojan Bogdanovic of the Indiana Pacers. 29-4 for Bojan with 5 triples, 2 assists, a steal and a block on 9 of 15 shooting and 6 of 7 from the line. He is one of the more streaky players in the NBA and he is on a massive hot streak. He is the 19th ranked player over the last week, averaging 22 points, 3.5 threes, 4 rebounds and 1.5 steals. But of course, as always, when players like this go on hot streaks, it's because of shooting. 54 from the field, 54 from 3, numbers which won't stick. He's at 47 from the field for the season and 39 from 3. Really good numbers, absolutely no doubt about that. But he's not going to be able to stick at this current level. He does very little in the other areas. His current steal rate is double his seasonal steal rate, so something that's not going to stick there. He's the 137th ranked player for the season, which can make him usable in 12-team leagues, but it doesn't put him in that must-own category. I'm looking at blokes who are like a top 120, 115 in 12-team leagues as your must-own guys, maybe even stretch it to top 100. And Boyan's not there. In the last 2 weeks, yeah, he is. He's the 69th ranked player.
Giggity!
But again, it's coming on high percentage shooting, which is something that's unlikely to persist at the current level that it's at. And then when he's just not a contributor in those other areas and has a history of being as up and down as almost any player in the NBA, it's tough to rely upon. His last 4 games, he has hit 14 triples. He has scored a minimum of 18 points, 21, 18, 19, and 25. The 2 games prior to that, he scored 9 points in total. He was 2 of 8 from the field combined in those 2 games. Had 1 assist, no steals. So we're talking about, you know, a strong run, a shit run, and an average run before that. And that's the player that Bojan is. He really hasn't changed too much this season as opposed to what we've seen from him in the past. Can be usable for threes, can give you some points, can give you very, very little else. At least he has improved his overall efficiency this season. His true shooting is nudging close to 60%, and that's really good as a wing. But the return of the little dog Glenn Robinson, the 3, which will happen in the next couple of games, could take a minute or two away from Bojan, and then that might drop him 5 or 10 spots in the ranking and, you know, really relegate him, I guess, to 14-team leagues or streaming situation in most formats. The young gun of the night, the Blue Arrow. 18, 4, and 7 for Jamal Murray, 4 triples and 2 steals, another efficient night for him. I think he has legitimately got top 20 upside. He's the top 50 player over the last month. He is the 42nd ranked guy over the last 2 weeks. His efficiency has been fantastic. True shooting up to 58 this year, up from 52 last season. But over the last 7 games, that's where it's really impressive. True shooting of 62, averaging 18.7 with 4.5 rebounds and 4.7 assists. So you contrast that to, say, a Rocket Rodney Hood, who's giving you 3 rebounds and 1.7 assists. The fact that Murray can score at the same level, actually higher, do it efficiently, 6% higher from the field, but then add in assists and add in above average rebounds as well for the position. The one thing that is lacking in his game, it's not his free throws because he's a 93% shooter this year. That is a huge, huge number. And if he starts getting to the line 4 times per game, that along with everything else he can do, that could push him to top 15, top 12. That is the legit upside of this guy in fantasy. You shoot 93% on 5 attempts per game, that is really, really pushing it up into Kyrie, Isaiah Thomas-ish type value, Jim Butler sort of numbers. Add in assists, add in some rebounds, add in a 20-point per game guy, hit three threes per game. That is the ceiling of where the Blue Arrow can get to. He's 61st for the season. He was dicked around to begin the year by Dr. Michael Malone, but we've seen those numbers really stabilize. His playing time has been fairly consistent, and he has responded super efficiently. And another great example of why, when a guy shoots, you know, 15% from the field for the first five games of the season, and that might seem like an exaggeration, he didn't hit a three in four of his first five games. That's how poorly he was shooting from three, and everyone was ready to drop him. Oh, terrible. 8 points, 2 points, 8 points, 16 points, 6 points. Got to get rid of this guy. Terrible. Then he reeled off 3 20-pointers in a row, and it was basically bang from there. He has not scored in double digits since the 16th of January, where he had a weird 7-point game. In his last, how many have we got here? In his last nine games, he's gone over 30 points three times. He has hit 5 triples twice and 4 in another game. He's had assists of 6, 7, and 8. He just needs those steals and to get to the line a little bit more. And then we are legitimately talking about a top 10 challenger at some point in the future, but almost a definite top 20 guy at some point coming up. So you have to value him really, really highly. And I've loved what we've seen from the Blue Arrow this season. Just superb stuff. Probably not going to crack the top 40 this year. Might end up as a top 50 guy, but we're talking, you know, an absolute no-brainer, I think, top 50 player next season in fantasy leagues. The dart of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Oh, no, my boy. Oh, I should play that one.
Oh, no!
Nick Mirotic, 5-3-2, didn't hit a triple, 1 steal, 2 of 8 from the field, and 1 of 2 from the line. He was fantastic in his Pelicans debut, going 18-12, but this one, not so good. The whole Pelicans team was pretty disgustingly poor in this one. He is as clear a must-own as there is. He will have the occasional poor game. We've seen that from him. He shot the ball really well this year, 47 from the field and 42 from three, but over the last month, those numbers have dipped down to 44 from the field and 36 from three. And that's something we highlighted once he returned from injury, is that his level of shooting was never going to persist, and it has started to come down. Again, as clear a must-own as there is that could be potentially on your wire. He started today. Dante Cunningham was out of the rotation entirely. Don't look at this and be panicky or anything like that. He is almost a guarantee to be a top 100 guy for the rest of the year. There'll be the occasional one of these thrown in, and then you'll get a 27-13 game with, you know, 5 triples in the next couple of games. That's the sort of player that Mirotic can be. It was just not a good performance from him and his entire team, pretty much. Let's go on to question time. Today's question comes from Kyle, who's on Twitter at KansasCity1985. I'm going to guess, Kyle, that you were born in 1985 and that you're from Kansas City. I could be wrong, but that's my guess. He says, if you could have dinner with one NBA player and no questions were off limits, who would it be? At first, I read this question and I didn't look at the no questions were off limits, and I thought, who would I want to have dinner with? Had a few options out there, but my answer to that part of the question was Jaylen Brown. I reckon he seems like just a super good bloke, like an absolute ripper, top notch, top shelf sort of bloke, a smart, intellectual guy who I think he'd be able to have, you know, smart conversations with that didn't necessarily, you know, revolve around the NBA, a guy who's a pretty deep thinker. I think that would be a great guy. But if I wanted to go with someone who no questions are off limits, I'd take the dud of the night. I'd take Nick Mirotic, because I reckon he's got a couple of pretty good stories up his sleeve. Not only do you get the stories from back in Europe where weird and wild shit goes down, but the stuff from last season with the three alphas, with the Rondo / Wade Butler Instagram posts, with him siding with Rondo in training, the workouts, the old versus new guard, the dysfunction of the front office, all that sort of stuff. Plus, this year, punched in the face by Bob Portis. What happened there? How did everything go down? What was the reception from players? Were you happy with the way that Bulls management treated the situation and the suspension? All that sort of stuff. So many questions that I'd like to ask Mirotic. I'd also be able to beard shame him and tell him that mine was better. I'd probably be wrong, but that's they're the two guys. So Jaylen Brown, if it was just one guy that I picked, but if there's no questions off limit, Mirotic, a couple of really nice. I'm sure there's someone I'm missing. You go, this is the person I'd use. This is the person I'd go to dinner with. But Mirotic, I reckon he'd also, he put away a few beers as well. So that'd be an interesting dinner type situation. Let's go into these games now and try and break them down and try and work out what happened that you know, can be used for us fantasy-wise. The first game we're going to take a look at, the Portland Trailblazers and the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons, man, they are rolling since Blake Griffin arrived. Huge win for them. Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Did not shoot very well, but had 13 boards with 3 steals, 27% shooting. Yeah, absolutely fine to own him in 12-team leagues, but as I've said many times, absolutely not a must-own. Got to hold on to this guy for all your life and for all the season. Lillard had 25-5 with 2 steals. Actually ordered a pair of the Dame Lillard 4s, which should be coming soon, and a pair of Kobe ADs, getting them soon. Looking forward to those coming. Nurk played 26 minutes, 10-5 with a steal and 2 blocks. The minutes aren't where we would have hoped them to be, but the production's still okay at the moment. McCollum had 14, and Evan Turner was out, so Mo Harkless started. Harkless played really well in the last game. The odds of that happening again were pretty limited, and the always go with the odds, because he had 6 points in only 24 minutes, and you should not be even sniffing around him in the majority of leagues. A lot of minutes for Shabazz Napier, with Turner out, 26 of them. 8 points with 2 triples, really just a 3-point specialist. And you're getting to the stage now in roto leagues where you can start making, or you should really be starting to make your adds and drops based on categories you're looking to attack and defend. So I might say that Napier is not a 12-team league guy, but if you really need threes and you're going to get 2 per game out of Shabazz most times, then adding him in that league might actually work. If you're well ahead, or if you're, say, got a 1 in rebounds and you can't get anywhere close to that guy that's in second, then you can drop one of your rebounds and get this guy and try and make up ground in other areas. So that's where the rotisserie strategy comes in, is trying to work out where the value can be. There's so much garbage time in this game as well, so don't be too concerned by the low minutes for a guy like McCollum. Onto the Pistons, Drummond, 17-17 with 5 assists, a steal, and 3 blocks. Really great. And Blake Griffin, again, as the backup center, not using any other backup center here. Will Reed only played the 3 minutes in garbage time. Henry Allenson only the 3 minutes. So we're seeing basically Drummond and Griffin and Tone Tolliver play those minutes in the front court. Tolliver played another 27, had 15-7 with 3 triples. I thought that he might be a big loser from this Griffin trade because they wouldn't be able to push Griffin down to the 3 like they did with Toby Harris to get Tolliver minutes. They did it the other way. They pushed Griffin up to the 5, eliminated Moreland and Willie Reed from the rotation, and getting Tolliver in, an excellent 3-point streamer like I spoke about with Napier, and getting some big minutes now. Reggie Bullock had 13-6-3, added 3 steals, added 3 triples. The 6 boards are really nice. He is a guy to own. While Stan Johnson got a lot of minutes, didn't do too much, 8-4-4 with a triple one. His best game was clearly that game without Griffin. Still has 12-team league value, but that sort of performance, I guess, inflated what we can expect. As for Blakey, 21-9-6, he's just really, really good. It's as simple as that. He is a really good player, and he's, complaining on the court, the whole Clippers ethos really has painted him in a bad light. As for his overall basketball ability, still not saying he wasn't annoying in any sense, and he clearly was, but he is really, really good. The Wizards get the victory over the Pacers, a depleted Pacers team. The Wizards, who now can't lose, apparently, that John Wall is out. They ran a lot more Bradley Beal at point guard in this one. He had 21 points with 3 assists in 36 minutes. That limited Satoransky to just 22 minutes, and Timmy Frazier played 19. Satoransky still had 6 assists, still had 2 steals. So that, is, of course, still standard league usable and should be owned in most formats. Kelly Oubre with Beal pushing across to play at the 1 more. We had more minutes on the wing. So Oubre had 15-7 with a triple one in 32 minutes. He'd seen his minutes drop since Wall had gone out. This was a nice bounce back, more of a streamer and 14-team league guy. Not a good shooting night for Markieff Morris, but still got the double-double. While Otto Porter, he battled some foul trouble and had 13-2-3 in his 25 minutes. Marcin Gortat, 11-9 in 21, actually saw fewer minutes than Jan Mihinmi. That's not something to really action in any leagues, but it is something to pay attention to. And when Mihinmi's getting more minutes, that should be just another nail in the coffin for Marcin Gortat's standard league value. But you're all aware that he's not a guy for those sort of leagues. Onto the Pacers, they were without Vic Oladipo, who had an illness, and then Daz Collison, the news out of nowhere that he's having knee surgery, is going to be out 2 to 3 weeks. I guess being out 2 to 3 weeks at this time of the year is beneficial because the All-Star breaks in there, so that is a week without any game, so that means he's not missing all that many games, but knee surgeries can be weird. Let's hope he is back, yes, quicker than expected. With him out, Corey Joseph started. Corey Joseph is not a good fantasy player. Said this plenty of times, and I don't care that he is going to start and play big minutes. he is not a must-own 12-team league guy. And this, I went through and tweeted out what his numbers were in the two starts that the two games that Collison had missed this season. He averaged 5.5 points per 36 minutes, 3 rebounds, and I think 7 assists or 6 assists per 36 in that time. And he did it again today, almost exactly the same thing. 36 minutes, 7 points, 2 rebounds, 4 assists. We can use the history from this season. His per 36 numbers are not good. His value last year when he had to replace Kyle Lowry, he had a couple of good games, but overall he's not good. Maybe he can be a top 130 guy in the time that Collison's out, but with the trade deadline approaching, wasting a waiver acquisition on him in a 12-team league, it's just as low upside as it gets, and I wouldn't be doing it in most 12. Now, I added him in a 14-team league, and I think that's a totally fine move, clearly, because I did it. But in a 12-team league, he's just so low. And he'll have a game where he has 18 points and hits 4 threes, and someone will tweet at me, "Hey, what do you think, mate? Good on you. Hey, Corey Joseph gone off." And then he'll go out and he'll put together a string of these piss-poor games. Unless everything about what we've seen from him throughout his career turns out to be a lie, I am not banking on him to have this solid top 60, top 70 fantasy value like Daz Collison has had this season. Mighty Joe Young actually started the second half over Lance Stephenson, who was starting in place of Oladipo. He had 17-2 with 5 triples. And to be honest, if him and Corey Joseph played the same amount of minutes, Young's the guy you want. That's probably not going to happen. It's not even going to come close to happening. But just keep an eye on Joe. He did start one of the games that Collison was out earlier in the season with Joseph coming off the bench. And he can be an interesting points and threes boost, maybe for 14 to 16 teamers. But just watch to see what happens. As for Lance, he played 38, 13, 9, and 6 with 2 steals. He'll do a little bit more ball handling, so he could have some fringe 12-team value as well. Miles Turner, 6-5 in 23 minutes. Just a horrendous performance. Foul trouble got the better of him. 5 fouls in that playing time. Not a good night. So that meant Sabonis got extra playing time. He had 15-4, and Thaddeus Young had 7-7 in 30 minutes. The next game we're going to take a look at, the Orlando Magic and the Miami Heat. Big win for the Magic here. No Aaron Gordon. So Mario Hezonja finally started over Bismack Biyombo and played 32 minutes. He had 20 points, 5 rebounds, 4 triples, 3 assists, 2 steals, and a block. And this bloke has been impressive this season. I really dislike the move of the Magic front office for declining his rookie option. Yes, he wasn't good last year. He was playing through an injury. I think it was a groin injury. But it's never a good idea to me to reduce or to decline that rookie option on a bloke who's literally 22 years of age heading into his third season where so many players take a step forward. Over the last month, Hezonja is the 102nd ranked player in 25 minutes, averaging 12, 4, and 1.7. But we have to remember that the value that Hezonja provides is coming without Aaron Gordon. He is playing tons of his minutes at power forward this season. So when Azza returns, in fact, 70% of his minutes at power forward. So when Azza returns, he goes back to playing backup behind John Simmons. Now, I've said it multiple times. He's a better player than John Simmons. I have absolutely zero doubt in my mind that he has been better than Simmons this season. And I think he is a better player than him and definitely a better prospect moving forward. But will they do that? Will they move Simmons out to put him in? And then you got the return of Terrence Ross to focus in on. Now, how does that impact things? So while everyone's looking, oh, do we go and add Mario? It's going to require an Aaron Gordon lingering injury, which could be the case. We don't know. He's already been ruled out of the slam dunk contest. So there's obviously some long-term concern with that hip. And you can definitely ride Mario. Over the last 6 games, he's the 54th ranked player. You can't turn that sort of value down. But to be stashing him, hoping that, you know, all of a sudden he plays 30 a night when everyone's healthy, that seems like an unrealistic scenario to me. It is going to require either an Aaron Gordon trade, probably a 1% chance of that happening, or an Aaron Gordon lingering injury, maybe a 20% chance. Could work out, but that's the reason why Hezonja is getting these minutes, is because he is playing at power forward and he is getting those Gordo minutes, and then he goes back to being a 22-minute-a-game guy instead of a 27 or 28-minute-per-game guy. So I already talked so much about Hezonja, but I thought it was important. Now, in saying all that, John Simmons was okay. He has 16 points, but it's like so many guys, you hear it all the time. He does nothing outside of scoring, so when he has a good night, it comes on 67% shooting and very little else there. Biyombo had 9-5 with a pair of blocks, while Lord Alfred Payton, only 25 minutes. That's 4 games in a row of subpar playing time for the Lord. 10-2-7. Still has some value. You're going to be interesting to see what he does against the Cavs and their piss-poor defense. Evan Fournier struggled with fouls, 13 and 4 in his 25 minutes. With Payton and Fournier limited in their playing time, we had more minutes for Shelvin Mack, more minutes for DJ Augustine, and Augustine provided some nice numbers. He, at this point, is a three-point streamer. It also appears like Mo Spates has replaced Ken Birch in the rotation, which is extraordinarily frustrating. Only 7 minutes here for Birch. Onto the Heat. Justice Winslow started again alongside Kelly Olynyk, and Olynyk suffered a shoulder issue. It sounds like he's going to miss time. He's going to have an MRI on Tuesday and going to be reevaluated. I would guess, again, complete guess, just based on what you hear from him saying that he's been told not to move his arm and he's in a lot of pain, my guess would be 3 weeks. Complete guess. I could be well off on that, so don't take that as some sort of advanced analysis or inside information. I think that could be the case for Olynyk. Jordan Mickey started the second half and only played 5 minutes. It was Winslow who got the boost here, and he got the extra playing time, as did Tyler Johnson, as we pushed into a smaller lineup for the Heat. James Johnson, Jimmy, we thought he'd be a beneficiary, wasn't. Only 18 minutes, 6-3. He could very well be a beneficiary moving forward. And the other guy that everyone was really, really quick to go the old Dutch rudder on was Bam Adebayo. 26 minutes for Bam, 18-10 with a steal and two blocks. And I always like to provide a cautionary tale, a level of, I guess, the opposite analysis. Bam is playing well. I've said this plenty of times. He's been a super surprise to me. I love what he can do. I think he's got some significant fantasy upside. He played 26 minutes here, but he played exclusively at center, with Whiteside only having 23 minutes and having 19 and 14. Bam plays in that fourth quarter because they don't like Whiteside's defensive liability and his ability to stretch out to the perimeter, to switch, his Whiteside's inability to shoot at all or to pass, and Adebayo can do all those things. But as we've seen with Bam this season, he'll have a game like this and then he'll absolutely turn in a stinker. The other thing you should not be expecting from Adebayo is for him to sport a 25% usage, the second highest on the team behind Whiteside. That's what he did today. That enabled him to get to that 18-10, and that is just not a realistic target for him. Yes, Olynyk out means that he is going to get all of those backup center minutes, which could be 20 minutes on one night. It could be 27 on another night. But he is just not going to play at power forward really at all. There'll be Winslow and Jim Johnson play those minutes there. And Olynyk had been the starting power forward. So it's not going to be this massive, massive boom for Adebayo. You can add him if you think, you know what, Whiteside's definitely getting traded and then Bam's going to play 30 a night. He's still going to be inconsistent. And this is not as clear a path to great value as what it may appear on the surface. It's just that the game that Olynyk went down, Adebayo played well. So people tie those things together. When the majority of Olynyk's minutes are coming at power forward, it doesn't really impact Adebayo at all. Sure, it might give him an extra 3 or 4 per game, which makes him a guaranteed 14-team league guy. A 12-team or even 10-team must-own, I think that's probably pushing it a little bit. Joshy Richardson, 20 points, not a lot else, but we'll take that. Well, Winslow had a strong game, 16-8, a steal and a block. Strong games and Justice Winslow don't normally go together in the same sentence, but that was an encouraging sign. He might be that 16 or 14 team league flyer guy if Olynyk misses some time here. The Iron Shoulder had 13, 9, and 7. The Duke struggled, just the 5 points for Wayne Ellington in his 29 minutes. The Utah Jazz and the New Orleans Pelicans. What's going on with the Jazz, man? 4 games in a row, over 120 points. They are rolling at an extraordinary level. Rudy Gobert, 19-10 with a steal and a block. Jingle & Joe had 18-5 with 2 steals and 4 triples and absolutely is worth owning. Derek Favors, 19-7 in 28 minutes and actually hit 2 threes. If he can become stretchy, then he can maintain a fair chunk of his value and playing time next to Gobert. And ravishing Rick Rubio. I haven't played it for a while, but here it is now. Believe it or not, Rubio is the 19th ranked player over the last 2 weeks and the 10th ranked guy over the last week, averaging 23 points, 4 rebounds, 10 assists, and only 0.8 steals. So he could legitimately be, if he was getting steals at his normal level, like a top 6 or 7 player. He is shooting 57% from the field, actually 55 over the last 6, and 62% of 3. Over the last month, in an astonishing number, he is shooting 43% from three-point range. I don't know if he's figured it out, but this is sensational. And still, though, we don't have a full grasp on how everything works when everyone's playing their full minutes. Rocket Rodney Hood got back up to 30, but the Don Mitchell, he was under 20 minutes. So that enabled, we got more Rubio and Hood with Don being limited. In previous games, there was no Gobert. In other games, there was no Rocket. We've yet to see, you know, 35 for the Don, 30 for Rocket, and then how does Ravishing fit into that? We don't know that just yet. Of course, he's a clear must-own guy. He's looking super good, but this level of field goal percentage, this level of three-point percentage has no way of being able to stick. He's not a 55% shooter all of a sudden. And maybe that playing time comes down when everyone is back in their normal roles. But if you have him, you love it. Royce O'Neal continues to be really impressive. 13, 6, and 3 in 20 minutes for Royce. But like Rocket, 86% shooting is not a realistic target. He is clearly ahead of Alec Burks in the rotation. He played more minutes than Joe Johnson. If you're in a deeper league, 16-team leagues, I'd be definitely looking at Royce here, because that is another strong performance. And he looks absolutely fantastic. What a bargain contract. What a great effort of scouting from Dennis Lindsay. On to the Pelicans. Not a good night from Tone Davis. 15 and 11 with three blocks. Well, Drew Holiday, he just kept on continuing to do what he does. 28, 5, and 3. Always good when we get 14 minutes of DeAndre Liggins, who somehow has signed another two-year deal. I don't know why this bloke still plays. He's not as good a defender as what Woj makes him out to be. Woj and his agent, man, they are definitely, there's definitely some deals being done there. Every tweet of Woj that involves DeAndre Liggins, who gets articles written about him, an elite perimeter defender who's providing quality minutes on the wing. Like, no, he's not. No, he's not a quality minute player. He's just not, but he's getting minutes here again. Darius Miller, only the 20 minutes for 2 points. Cheick Diallo remained in the rotation, had 6 points with a steal and a block, even with Emeka Okafor playing. So Diallo has that deep league value as the backup center now. I don't know what was going on in this game. Rubio's hitting shots. Rondo hit 4 triples for 18 points with 8 assists. His minutes are so up and down. 30 one game, 18 the next, 30 the next, 21 the next. I don't know how to get a full grasp of this. I don't have full confidence he's going to play 30 a night. You need some assist. Maybe you take a flyer on him. But this is the worst time to be taking flyers on guys like this with the trade deadline only 3 or 4 days away. It was just going to open up some really significant value. Maybe. We're not quite sure of that yet. It could be an absolute stinker like it was last season. Remember, we are going to be doing a live Periscope, myself and Greg Ehrenberg, of the trade deadline. The next game, the Charlotte Hornets and the Denver Nuggets. Kemba was good again, 23-4. And with no Marvin Williams for the second consecutive game, Trevion Graham was the big beneficiary over Frank Kaminsky. Kaminsky's been just putrid, really. 9 points in 22, while Graham had 11 points, 2 assists, 2 steals. Hit 3 triples out of 4 attempts. He does not miss from 3. I don't know where this came from, but it is 2 full seasons. As much full seasons of him playing limited minutes. But you know, high percentage shooting, it's craziness. If Marvin remains out, which it appears that he's going to be back at the end of the week, Graham can have some deeper league value. Batum, another decent game, 15-4-5, and Dwight had 9-7. Not much else to really talk about. Kid Gilchrist, I don't think you should have him anywhere near your 12-team leagues. While Cody Zeller, 8-10 in 17 minutes, nice numbers, a strong backup center, and a strong deep league guy who's going to be consistent, but definitely nowhere near your 12-team formats. On to the Nuggets. Nick Jokic, 15, 16, and 7. 2 threes, 2 steals.
It's pretty good. It's pretty, 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 pretty good.
Gary Harris is pretty good as well.
Nice, Gary!
27 with 5 triples, 2 assists, and a steal. This guy, I talked about him in a player spotlight the other day. His ceiling is through the roof. Now, I don't know how the doctor is going to run things when Paulie Millsap comes back. This offense is clicking at the moment. This team is flying. Millsap definitely screwed things up at the start of the season. Their whole offense was completely changed to try and integrate him. At some point, they're just going to say, Paul, mate, we want you to play good defense. We want you to be another offensive option, but we don't need you to be the number one option. We don't need to revolve the entire thing around you. We'll see if Malone can do that, because things are cracking with Jokic, with Harris, with the Blue Arrow, with guys like Farton, Will Barton, and Trey Lyles chipping in. There's a clear spot there for Millsap, because baby Nick Wilson Chandler is one of the biggest drop-offs of a player I've ever seen. He is disinterested. He looks out of it. He is horrible, and he is not a 12, 14, or 16-team league guy. But it's going to be interesting to see how they run things with Millsap. It did impact Gas Jazz's usage to begin the year. Hopefully it's not too much of a hit, but with the way they're playing, it shouldn't be. Barton had 18, 2, and 8 on 70%. Big numbers from him. Obviously, that's an inconsistent sort of a guy. While Torrey Craig played 27 minutes, had 6 and 7. Apparently, nobody knows how many days he's got left. Michael Malone doesn't know. Nobody knows. So at one point, it could just be time's up and you're not playing anymore. So that'll be an interesting moment when that happens. Hopefully, someone can actually work out how many days this guy has actually got left on the NBA because he's a two-way guy. The Bulls and the Kings, an absolutely extraordinary victory for the Bulls, 98 to the Kings, 104. And I say victory because they were up they kept the Kings to 9 points in the first quarter. And if you can keep a team to 9 points in the first quarter and somehow lose to preserve the tank, that is an astonishing effort. So congratulations to you, Chicago. Zach LaVine was aggressive, dunked all over Jakar Sampson, 27, 3 and 2 with 4 triples. Really efficient, looks strong at the moment. Justin Holiday also efficient, 20 points with 4 triples. And PunchBob Shiploke had 18, 14, and 4 in his 32 minutes. Of course, he jacked tons of shots. He provided poor defense. He provided inexcusably out-of-place celebrations. But that's what PunchBob does. He is a guy to own. Remember, though, that Lauri Markkanen was out of this game, and then Robin Lopez got ejected after 13 minutes of action. So Porter's had tons of playing time come his way, and it's not going to be the same as this every game. The Hammer, Denzel Valentine, had 11 and 7, more of a 16-teamer now, while Jaren Grant had 36, 9, 4, and 5. I'm feeling a little bit more confident that Chrissy Dunn is going to come back. They say he is pushing through that protocol, and he's getting in return to game mode at the moment. So I reckon 1 to 2 more games left for Chrissy Dunn before he is back. People dropped him. No doubt he's on some waiver wires. I would absolutely add him. And you want to talk about, you know, holding back acquisitions for the trade deadline. That doesn't count for Dunn. If he's available, I grab him. Yeah, I don't think he's going to be out for weeks and weeks. I think maybe you get him at the start of next week back. That's my guess at this point. On to the Kings. My man Bogdan Bogdanovic, who inexplicably had seen his minutes reduced as the team was developing the youth, he saw his playing time go down, but he showed once again why he is this team's best player. 15, 4, and 4 with 2 steals, while Zach Randolph in the full youth movement played 29 and had 11 and 9, 4 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks. Apparently, the resting two veterans thing is gone. Doesn't happen anymore. They've played all 5 of these guys every game for 4 or 5 games in a row. Randolph can then have some back-end 12-team league value, but it's not going to stick. I will give them a little bit of a pass because there's no Scalabissier's injured, Malachi Richardson's injured, Frankie Mason III is injured, so some of their young guys are injured, but it's also completely inexcusable that one of your young players, Georgios Papagiannis, is a DNP for 2 consecutive games while you're trotting out Costa Kufos and 30 minutes of Zach Randolph. Yeah, Labissiere's out. Play 18 minutes of Georgios. Rest Kufos. Give Randolph a night off. That's the bullshit part of it. You can, the injuries is a fine excuse. The other thing is, Bud Hield somehow plays fewer minutes now than he did before this resting policy was introduced. He can't seem to get more than 21 minutes per game. Now, I am far from the biggest Budrick Hield fan, but I don't need 27 minutes of Garrett Temple and 21 minutes of Bud Hield if we're developing the youth, which is just the biggest load of shit comment that Dave Yeager throws out there all the time. De'Aaron Fox suffered an ankle injury, didn't return. The Kings don't play again until Friday, so adding George Hill is not a smart move. He could get traded. The trade deadline's Thursday. De'Aaron Fox thinks he's going to be back by Friday. And in the meantime, like wasting that acquisition for 3 days when there could be some opportunities opening up on a guy like Hill for a non-serious injury, I don't think there's any need for it. So you can leave him on the waiver wire in pretty much all standard, or yes, in all standard formats. The Mavericks and the Clippers. Clippers get the victory. The Mavericks were without the pencil Harrison Barnes. So Yogi Ferrell started, had 9 points in 32 minutes. I think that at this point, it seems unlikely that Seth Curry plays at all this season, meaning Ferrell's minutes are going to remain fairly consistent. More of a 14 than a 12-team league guy, but the consistency will be there now. Dwight Powell, 3 big minute games as a starter. 29 here, 8, 10, and 4 with a block. Absolutely can be a 12-team league guy. Efficiency, rebounds, steals, and blocks is what his name of the game is. So if you don't need those, he provides you nothing. But I feel pretty good about his numbers moving forward. Devin Harris had 16 with not much else, while Wesley Matthews had 27 with 5 assists, 7 triples, 1 steal, 2 blocks. One of the best, probably the best game that Matthews has had all season. Great stuff from him. Dennis Smith was really bad in this one. 5 of 17 from the field. 12, 3, and 5. Still a must-own guy, clearly, in my opinion. On to the Clippers. We're going to talk about the Rooster Danilo Gallinari later on. He had 28-5 with 4 triples, but in case you can't wait for the player spotlight, he is must-own. You go and add him. It is not a hard decision. That is straightforward. DeAndre Jordan, 6-13 in 33 minutes, a steal and 2 blocks. Fine. Montrezl Harrell, 15 minutes, 4 points, 1 steal, 1 block. Again, there is absolutely no reason to consider him a must-own if this Clipper lineup stays the same. Now, of course, DeAndre could get traded, and he could assume 27 minutes as a starting center, but he has no value in standard leagues with the currently constructed Clippers. Boban Marjanovic has even less value. He has not played a single game, and you can say, Doc, yeah, he's a very special talent. We're going to use him. Doc hasn't used him. Van Gundy said the same thing. He never used him. Boban is going to need, again, a DeAndre Jordan trade, and for there to be pretty much no other center in the entire NBA coming back, because pretty much every other center would play ahead of him. It's for him to even move into the second string spot, and then maybe he gets 20 minutes a night. Maybe. Not unlikely, maybe. So there's a lot of factors. And look, DeAndre could definitely be traded. I'm not so sure that he is, to be honest. I think there's less than 50% chance that he goes. Much higher chance of a Lou Williams going, but I don't know about that. I couldn't say that that's accurate. But again, everyone who was, oh, Griffin's traded, absolutely have to go and grab Montrezl Harrell. I just don't see the upside as being that high. And again, a Jordan trade could change things, but someone could come back. There are plenty of centers that are looking to move around, and there are many centers in the NBA, lots and lots, that are much better than Montrezl Harrell, and that are much better than Boban Marjanovic, and the Clippers aren't necessarily going into tank mode. Avery Bradley, 12-3-2 with 3 steals. The 3 steals are nice. The 60% is nice, but I'd leave him for 14-team leagues, while Toby Harris had 19-5. Ty Wallace saw his minutes disappear, and when Austin Rivers comes back, they're going to disappear even further. 4 points, 2 assists, and a steal. I like what Wallace has done, but there's just not going to be enough playing time with Milos Teodosic, Lou Williams, Austin Rivers, Avery Bradley, the Rooster Danilo Gallinari, Wes Johnson. That's 6 blokes there who are all ahead of Ty Wallace, so his value is going to disappear very quickly. As for Milos, 3 points, 2 rebounds, 6 assists. Hard to keep owning. I thought he'd have a really strong value as the season went on. The addition of Avery Bradley has hurt him, so I think he can go in 12-team leagues. All right, that is all of the action from Monday. I am going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to shine that player spotlight on the Rooster for the LA Clippers, and then preview a really sexy Tuesday slate for DFS. The song by Big School called, which one we go to? Who Do You Think You Are? And then I'll be back to talk some DFS. Let's go on to the player spotlight, because it's the only player spotlight for today. It is the Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, who of course has been bothered by injury this season, has played only the 14 games, but still is a top 100 player in those 14 games, the 91st ranked player. But let's have a look what he's done since his return from injury. He's the 20th ranked player in that time, averaging 22 points in 30 minutes, 2.7 triples, 6 rebounds, The steals and blocks are low. They're always going to be low for the Rooster, but he is shooting 59% from the field and 57% from three. Of course, he shot the ball horribly to start this year. He is still under 40% from the field and under 32% from three over those 14 games. But as we talked about earlier with the Blue Arrow, players like this who have got a strong history of being decent shooters, it's not going to stick at this extraordinarily low level. Of course, many people dropped in because of the injury, but the removal of Blake Griffin from this team has opened things up here for the Rooster to go absolutely bananas for this second half of the season. His time in Denver was really punctuated by some elite free throw percentage seasons, getting to the line 8.2 and 6.1 times the last two seasons. If he can get that up on an above 90% shooting, he's 98% this year. I think he's missed one free throw for the entire year. Let's have a look. Yep, he's 48 of 49 for the season for his free throws. If he can get that up, and it's looked promising in the games back, the free throw attempts are up. He's had 11 in the last two games in 65 minutes, so that is a huge, huge jump. If he starts getting 5.5, 6 free throws a game, shoots at 95%, well, then that almost puts him as being a top 50 guy on his own. That'll also push him to 20 points per game. It'll push him to over 2 threes, and he's going to have, you know, assuming he can stay healthy, which is a big assumption, you might only get another 20 games out of him, 25 games out of him, but we have got a huge opportunity. I said it before. Go and grab him. If he is available, he needs to be owned in every single fantasy league. It's a no-brainer. Yeah, he could get injured, but his ability to give you points. Now, this is a guy you definitely own over Rocket Rodney Hood. He gets the line so much, the points will be higher. He hits threes. He can get rebounds as well. He can get you 6 rebounds per game, 5 rebounds per game. Not much happening defensively, but he's going to be a really valuable guy. Now, what about him as a player overall? Now, what's been the big drop-off for him so far this season? Well, if you look at his numbers over at Cleaning the Glass, he's actually seen his usage increase this season from last year. But what's happened is his efficiency so far has dropped right off. An effective field goal percentage of only 44% is piss poor. He was at 53 last year, and mainly because his three-point percentage had dipped so low. Before today's game, he was down at 29% from three, which, again, one of those numbers where you look at it and go, there's no way that's sticking. That's not going to be able to stick. And now, as he's come back, the numbers have jumped back up significantly. He is a player who, I guess that was weird the way he developed his free throws. Like, not something that was really a strength of his over the past, except for those last 2 years. He is a guy that is a poor defender, and the advanced metrics don't really look kindly on that, but his offensive value, like almost a 3 in his offensive box score plus minus the last 2 years, has pushed him into a positive in that category, positive VORP, above average PER, you know, really, really, really strong win shares numbers. Even though the poor defense, he has been a really valuable player from an advanced standing. His on-off numbers this year and last year strong, and he's been a positive pretty much every season of his career, apart from the year that he was traded from the Knicks to the Nuggets. He was a negative 1.7 there. Every other year, he's been a positive, but we have to look at him now as a guy. He's 29 years of age. When's he turned 30, actually? He must be getting pretty close to it. Where are we? He doesn't turn 30 until August, so he's 29 and a half. At the moment, we know the injury history. This is a guy that the most games he's ever played in a season is the 2012-13 season. Actually, that's not true. His second year, he played 81 games for the Knicks, and then 71 in 12-13, and then tore his ACL in that year. And since coming back, 59, 53, 63, and just the 14 games so far this season. So that's always going to be a concern. But when he plays, he is the guy who can push top 60, top 50 value in per game numbers, and he could realistically be a top 45, top 40 guy from here to the end of the season. And you just don't, again, one of those guys, you can hold your acquisitions, but you're not going to get better options than the Rooster in most situations. So he is a clear, clear must add. Him and a guy like Chris Dunn, if they're floating around, they're guys that you go and grab. But if we're looking at him for Dynasty, he's not going to have huge value because everyone gets very, very worried about injuries. No, man, he's injury prone. Never again. That's a common refrain from many people. And people who drafted him this year would have been really disappointed, and rightfully so, given the fact that he's missed so many games. But if you can try and based on what you're going to get over this, say, next 2 or 3 weeks, depending on when your league's trade deadline is, or even if he finishes the season strong in the off season, if he comes home with a top 30 finish, again, a real possibility. If he comes home with that, I would be trying to get rid of him in my dynasty leagues hard. He'd be 30 by the time next season starts. The injury history, the decline of things like free throw rate over time, rebounding, even his defensive numbers might dip even though they're not high. We expect numbers to really dip. And the situation may not be as favorable next season as what we're going to see for him here post All-Star. So it could be a great opportunity for him to showcase himself for fantasy trades and try and acquire something out of him. Because from now on, from 29 and up, 30 and up, it's very rare that players improve. And a guy like him with his fragility, he could start to get worse. I'm looking on Basketball Reference as his similarity scores. If you look at career, the bloke who's ranked just most similar with one of the greatest names of all time, Cincinnatus Powell. What a name. The other guys there, Rafe LaFrance, Will Jones, Dave Greenwood, Campy Russell. What are these names, man? They're great. Sidney Wicks, Keith Van Horn, Jack Coleman, Danny Granger, and Lonnie Shelton. So some interesting players there. I just thought I'd bring that up because Cincinnatus is an absolute ripper of a name. All right, let's go and talk about some DFS now. On FanDuel, the perfect lineup, ravishing Rick Rubio, 38.1. The Blue Arrow, 37.3. Drew Holiday, 42.5. Rocket had 40.1. Boyan had 41.8. Mario Hezonja had 39.5. Griffin had 37.8. Punchbob had 45.8. And Andre Drummond had 52.9 for a total of 375.8. That cost the full $60,000 on FanDuel. On DraftKings, we had Rubio at 41.25, Rocket Rodney Hood at 41.75, Boyan Bogdanovic 43, Punchbob at 47.5, Andre Drummond 53.25, Hezonja 38.75, Bam Adebayo at 39.5, and Nick Jokic at 50.5 for a total of 355.5, and that cost $49,500 dues. We have got an 8-game slate up for DFS, which is always a great number. I'm going to double check that because eight. Yep, I'm right. Trust your instincts, Josh. An 8-game slate for DFS and some interesting matchups. The first one of those is the Cavs and the Magic. This could be extraordinarily high scoring, both poor defenses. The Magic actually, do they beat the Cavs? They got pretty bloody close to beating them, I know that, and put up some big numbers. So there could be some interesting DFS value coming out of this game. Lord Alfred Payton has a good record against the Cavs. He is at 6,900, so it's a fairly high price, but this guy averages 34 points per game against the Cavs over the last three. They are yielding numbers to pretty much everyone that plays them. So Payton is in a really strong GPP spot. As for Isaiah Thomas at 6,500, well, the Magic, they allow point guards to go off as well. Thomas has struggled all season, but this is an opportunity for him. So he is an interesting tournament target as well, mainly matchup based. DJ Augustine at 41 has been all right, but I probably don't think there's much there. At shooting guard, Dwayne Wade, 5,800. That's too high. I am not interested. It's a great matchup, but that price tag just puts him a little bit out of reach. Evan Fournier at 63 is also too high. I know the matchup's fantastic, and he could be a tournament guy, but I just don't think that Fournier has really got that much upside at that price. The plumber, J.R. Smith at 41. Not really. Small forward, Hezonja. Aaron Gordon's out, 5,000 for Hezonja. I am locking this in as hard as I can lock it in. He'll probably come out and shit the bed, but he's got an opportunity to start, play good minutes in a low salary spot against a very good matchup. Everything is working in Hezonja's favor. His cash ownership is going to be through the roof. I am pretty confident with that, and he is going to be a good option here. John Simmons is at 48, a tournament option, mainly matchup based, while LeBron James. He's at 11,500. I think there are some better options out there on the board, to be honest, in the higher price category, especially for a team like the Houston Rockets, who gets to take on the Brooklyn Nets. So I think LeBron's a little bit more of a fade than what he's been recently. At power forward, not much. Jay Crowder at 4,000. No, not for me. Jeff Green, minimum.
My name is Jeff.
I believe Jeff Green, last time against the Magic, played fairly well. So he could be a tournament guy here. And then we go into the centers. You've got Bismack Biyombo at 52. It's a good matchup for him. I don't like it. Mo Spates at 38. That is a tournament play for sure. He's been getting some extra minutes. He could always go off, and the Cavs defense allows people to go off. Well, Channing Frye at 43, revenge game for Channing Frye. He would be a GPP type of an option with his ability to shoot, but definitely not reliable for cash. on DraftKings. I like Payton at cash as well for 6,700. Hezonja at 45 is probably the best bet on the entire board at that price. That is going to be impossible to not have that in cash, I think. Tournaments, LeBron's in play there at 11,400 and Wade at 5,000. I could even see Wade being a cash guy just because that price is so much lower. So I am interested in him on DraftKings. Let's go to the next one. We've got the Bucks. They're taking on the New York Knicks. Frankie Ntilikina is questionable with that knee. Yanni Adetokounmpo is probable with an ankle. Tyler Zeller, I don't imagine he is going to play in this game. He might, it's not like he's not in town, but he's got to pass physicals and all that sort of stuff, and he might not even be in the rotation anyway. It might be McCurr, it might be him. Whoever it is, it's not having an impact on DFS. Jarrett Jacks at 4,500, no interest. Same with Ntilikina, but I do like Eric Bledsoe. The matchup is brilliant for him. He's at 7,300. He's coming off a 41-point game. This should be a 35 to 38 type of performance, and that's great at that salary. So I do like Bled quite a bit. Ntilikina, Trey Burke. I'd maybe consider Burke as a GPP if Frank is out, but not really otherwise. At shooting guard, Timmy Hardaway has been poor. 16.5 average in the last three. He's at 5,900. Ownership will be down, so that makes him a good tournament option who does have 40-point upside. Courtney Lee, no interest. Chrissy Middleton at 75. The numbers have been a little bit too low, only 29 over the last three. I think it's not bad, but it's far from the best one out there. At power forward.
Percentages.
Yep. Kristaps is at 8,800. Power forwards against the Bucks have been a struggle. We've seen centers put up some good numbers. Power forwards, not so much. Not interested really in Kristaps here. He's coming off a big game fueled by some big defensive numbers. 8,800, I'm not looking at that. The Muppet John Henson's up to 58. He has been crushing it lately. That price is a little bit too high. Maybe I can still see him being used, but I'm a little bit more hesitant now. While Jabari Parker at 41, man, he killed it the first two games. 23 in that last game, still at 4,100. Absolutely got some upside there for Jabari. If they just bump his minutes to 22 or 23, he could really, really get past that in pretty comfortable fashion. Enes Kanter's at 6,900. I don't see the value in that. Koch at 3,800. He's got a little bit of tournament upside, as he always does. Dropped to 30 in the last game. While McCurr, I don't think we need to care about that too much. On to DraftKings. I like Yanni at 11,000. Sorry, I like Yanni on FanDuel as well. I should have mentioned him, of course. Jeez. I like Yanni a lot on FanDuel. On DraftKings, I like him a lot too. 11,000 cash and tournaments. Not many other guys really standing out too much on DraftKings. The pricing's probably a little bit high. The Muppet John Henson at 56 is all right. It's not as good a spot. Timmy Hardaway, Cancer's way too high. Bledsoe at 7,000 is a strong option there as well. Porzingis and Middleton, I think there are better guys out on the board over on DraftKings. Let's go to the next one. We've got the Rockets and the Nets. The Rockets are favored by 10.5. The total is 217.5. Quincy Acey is questionable with a finger issue. If he misses, they've already got Rondae Hollis-Jefferson out. You're going to have some weird lineups. More minutes for the Blue Swimmer. Damari Carroll playing almost exclusively at the four. More minutes for Jumpin' Joe Harris. More minutes for Sauce Castillo. And, not much changes with the centers, but that's going to be interesting if AC misses. For the Rockets, Trevor Ariza is still out with a hamstring, or Eric Gordon should be back, and that's going to really severely limit what Gerald Green can do with Gordo back. At point guard, Chrissy Paul. Point guards against the Nets, they go off. He dropped 51 of his own in the last game. At 9,600, I'm all about Chris Paul here, while Spencer Dinwiddie at 7,200. Shit matchup, tough matchup. That's that's fade territory at that elevated price. At shooting guard, got Gordo at 5,400. Not really keen. LeVert at 42, also not that keen. Well, Jim Harden at 11,200. Let's go. This is 60-point triple double territory here for Jimmy. This is 70, 80-point upside for FanDuel. I'm all about Jim here. This is the guy I use over LeBron. This is the guy I use over Yanni at that $11,000. And yeah, look, there is a blowout risk, but Mike D'Antoni, man, how often is he resting guys? If Harden's putting up numbers, he is going to let him roll and he is going to put up the big ones. D'Angelo's at 55. D'Angelo Russell, no. Small forward, the Blue Swimmer, 4,500. If AC is out, he becomes a more appealing tournament guy, while Damari Carroll at 53. I actually like Carroll here, irrespective of AC status, and it actually goes higher if Quincy happens to miss. Needs to be more people called Quincy, to be honest. Jumpin' Joe Harris at 38 is also a strong, probably even a strong cash play, I think, if AC is out, but more of a tournament guy otherwise. Jim Webb, Gerald Green, PJ Tucker, not really keen there. At power forward, there's very little. There's Ryan Anderson at 42, who's actually coming off a big game, but that happens so infrequently for him that really hard to trust that. Luke Marmoute at 43, low upside guy, low floor, so that's a fade. At center, this is what it's about. Clint Capella, 7,800. Let's go. Centers against the Nets, fantastic. Now, Jared Allen can reduce that a bit, but I don't care. Let's go, Clint. Let's also go with Jared Allen at 5,700. I feel pretty good about using him. The salary does turn me off just a little bit, but not enough for me to say no. Nene Okafor, yeah, not a lot for me to care about there. On DraftKings, I like Jim at 11.6, Jim Harden, Clint Capella at 75, and Jarrett Allen at 53, while Damari Carroll, more of a tournament guy on DraftKings at 56, because he's just that little bit higher. Still fading D'Angelo, Karras, jumping Joe Harris, probably a little bit higher. Chrissy Paul at 97, also in a decently strong position. Let's move on to the next one. It's the Boston Celtics. It's the Toronto Raptors. No spread currently for this one because we don't know the status of Kyrie Irving. We don't know the status of Marcus Morris. Of course, if Kyrie's out, it's going to be all about Terry Rozier. If Morris is out, it's going to be Semi Ojeleye, Daniel Tice, and Aaron Baines who get a boost in their playing time. Still no Greg Monroe, of course. At point guard, Kyle Lowry is at $7,000. Has done very well against Boston in the past. The Celtics point guard defense is a tough one, but Lowry has done very well, so I like using him here. As for Kyrie at 84, if he is ready to go, I don't think you should feel too worried about using him. Freddie VanVleet at 48, that's a big price for Freddles. Did have a huge game in that last one, and he's been a bit of a big game, small game sort of a player. I don't think I'd be all that keen here. Well, Rozier at 7,000, that's a very high price for Tezza. Of course, you're fading that if Kyrie is out. If Kyrie is out, it's touch and go as to whether I would use it. At shooting guard, DeMar DeRozan is at 8,400, another guy who's got a good record against the Celtics, averages almost 50 in the last three meetings. I like him. There's nothing really too much to say about DeMar. He's a totally fine guy to use there. At small forward, Jaylen Brown at 56. I like this for Brownie. Maybe not a cash guy, but definitely a GPP upside player. CJ Miles at minimum salary is doing very little. While the Jedi, OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
Minimum salary guy, not really going to make too much of a dent. Ojeleye had 21 points in the last game in elevated minutes. He's at 3,600. If we hear that Marcus Morris is out, maybe you could throw Ojeleye in. I just think he's a very limited upside guy here. Serge Ibaka at 48 has struggled, only a 21 average over the last five, but I think there's 30 to 35 point upside here, which is good value at that salary. So he's in play. Jason Tatum at 61, I don't really like that for Tatum. Well, Siakam, Daniel Vanilla Tice, or Marcus Morris, not happening for me. Jakob Poeltl at 3,900 as a center. That's a fade. Al Horford at 77. Horford's been crushing, averaging 41 over the last three, but that price, I think that takes it a little bit out of reach. While Jonas Valanciunas, we've seen centers pull down some big, big games, some big sort of rebounding beastie guys, Enes Kanter being one of them. That is a big price for Valanciunas, considering the minutes could be 27, it could be 18, it could be 13. The trend has been positive for JV, but I think it's more of a tournament situation at that sort of a price where he can drop you a 50, but he's just as likely to drop you a 22, which is going to get you nowhere near where you need to be. On DraftKings, DeRozan at 77, I love that. Lowry at 72, still pretty good, not as good as FanDuel, while Valanciunas at 55. Now we're talking, probably still not cash, but I love it for tournaments. DeLon Wright at 39, I think has got great upside there as a tournament guy. And Poeltl at 36, I think can also be a tournament player. Brown and Tatum, not really interested. Horford at 8,000 just seems too high for me. Not going to be partaking in that one. The next one, we've got the Memphis Grizzlies and the Atlanta Hawks. Wayne Seldon Jr. is questionable with knee soreness. We've got Deontay Davis already ruled out. Chandler Parsons is out. And for the Hawks, Ersan Ilyasova is probable. Dwayne Dedmon started the last game with him out. We'll see if that sticks or what they do with that rotation. At point guard, Dennis Schroeder's at $7,000. I feel comfortable with Schroeder getting me 35 here, so that's a strong cash play with some upside. Even though he has struggled a bit lately, I think a 40-45 pointer is just around the corner. Andy Harrison's up to 5,400 because he is putting up consistent numbers. Schroeder's not a bloke that's stopping many people. So I think that Harrow at that price, I think you should have a level of confidence that he's getting you 25. And that is a weird thing for me to say about Andrew Harrison, but it's the way things are going. Mario Chalmers at 36 is a GPP guy, but that's really about it. Delaney and Tyler Dorsey. Why is Tyler Dorsey a point guard on FanDuel? He is not a point guard. At shooting guard, Seldon's at 38. No interest in cash. He's questionable. He's been shit, but he's got upside, so he is a tournament sort of a guy here. While Kent Bazemore at 6,100. Sorry, mate, that's too high. That takes away a lot of the value. Ballinelli at 38, not happening. Small forward, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince at 4,700. I am in on that. I think there's a 30-pointer coming here, not for cash, but I do like it for tournaments. While Dylan Brooksy Brooks at 4,200, mainly looking at him as a tournament guy in the case that Seldon sits, which I think is a possibility. At power forward, the Baptist John Collins is at 46. He had 33 the last time against Memphis. Will he actually get minutes in this one? That remains to be seen. Probably just a tournament guy, if that. Ilyasova, Jermichael Green, Jarrell Martin. Very hard for me to get excited about any of those guys. At center, Marc Gasol at 8,900. A superb matchup for Gasol. He's got a great record of recent times, 43 average over his last five. I think, though, only a tournament one, and that's mainly because of just how good this matchup is for Gasol. Not interested in cash, though. The Undertaker at 49, love him, but just have no confidence in what's happening with the playing time. Plumlee, Muscala, and Brandon Wright are other centers, and we're not going to be too focused on them. On DraftKings, I like Gasol at 87 and Schroeder at 67 as cash and tournament guys. And for tournaments only, Prince, Harrison, Andy Harrison, and Dylan Brooks at 44. Very similar to how things look over on FanDuel. Let's go on to the next game. We've got the Washington Wizards and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers are favored by 6, and the total is 213.5 points. Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot was not on the injury report for the Sixers, so he should be good to go. It doesn't mean he's in the rotation. There's Justin Anderson and Jared Bayless who could be taking those minutes, so we're not sure he's even going to play. At point guard, Timothy John McConnell is down to 3,600 because he has been bad, averaging 10 over the last 5 and seen his minutes plummet as guys like Anderson are getting more playing time now. Maybe you could look at McConnell, but I don't really think that's necessary. Satoransky's at 5,600. I don't think he's got a huge tournament upside, but for cash, even today in a game where he wasn't great, still put up 22 points in 22 minutes, and that's not a bad floor. He's got 35-point upside. I don't think it's a bad move to put Satoransky in, especially in for cash. Frazier and Bayless, not interested. At shooting guard, Brattles, $9,000, only 21 points for Beal today. I think that 9,000 is way too high, and that's a strong fade. While JJ Redick at 49, also not doing it for me. At small forward, Kelly Oubre Jr. at 45, big game from him today. Had been poor up until that one. Tournament at all, if you're going to use him at all. While Bob Cubs at 59, again, tournament guy. Otto Porter at 72 is someone I'd steer clear of. I like Ben Simmons at 85. He's averaging 55 against the Wizards so far this season, which is clearly a very good number at that sort of a salary, so I'm all about him. While Šarić at 6,700, I think that's probably just a little bit too high. I like what Šarić is doing. Maybe you could use him for cash, but I just don't think the tournament upside's all that great. Markieff at 63 is a little bit too highly priced also. At center, the process, Joel Embiid, 10,100. I like it. I like it. Yeah, it's good. That's all I got to say. Marcin Gortat at 52. Probably a fade, same as Jan Mahinmi as well. Over on DraftKings, let's look at Embiid at 95 as a great option. Benny Simmons at 82 and Šarić at 64 is in a better spot on DraftKings and on FanDuel. Beal at 89, still priced a little bit too high. We've got the last two games to get into now. The first one of those is the Phoenix Suns and the LA Lakers. No spread currently available for this one. Devin Booker is out, so Tyler Ulis will get the start, and he is at 3,700, and that is insane value. I don't think Ulis is very good, but this is 35, 36-point upside. With Isaiah Cannon out, the only other point guard on the roster is Josh Gray, so Ulis is going to have to play minutes, and as we saw at the end of last season, he just bludgeons his way to numbers. Bad efficiency, but just takes all the shots and puts up the numbers. So I like it, and it is a really good matchup for him. Joshy Gray at minimum salary. Maybe he can have a weird night like he did the other day in his NBA debut where he had 16 points in 9 minutes. So maybe he's a tournament guy. Shooting guards. Josh the Hitman Hart at $5,000. I imagine he starts. Beautiful matchup. Love him here. Jordy Clarkson at 6,000. I'd rather Hart. I think Clarko can be a GPP guy, but I have less faith in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope at 53. Yeah, there's some upside there, of course, given the opposition that he's playing against. Troy Daniels, Alex Caruso, Daniel House. That's going to be a no from me. At small forward, Joshy Jackson's at 59. No Devin Booker. Load me up on Josh. He's averaging over 33 in the last three. I think this is a 30-point type of performance. He can go big. I'm in. Ingram at 6,900.
Giggity!
I like it. The matchup really seals it here for me for Ingram. And then we've got TJ Warren at 68. Again, that's a pretty strong tournament play with some cash value. At power forward, Marquese Chris is playing after his suspension. He's at 4,600. He's also terrible. It is a good matchup for Chrissy, though. So in a GPP, I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that. While the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma at 4,300, he's averaging 14 points. He has been bad. I don't know if they're going to run that big-minute Randall-Lopez front court limiting Kuzma and Nance, but that makes it really tough to rely upon Kyle or even Larry at this point. At center, Len at 4,300. I don't know why you would have any faith in Alex Len at this point. Well, Randall at 76, that's so high. No way I'd want that in cash. That is a stupid high price for Randall, but he could have a 50 against this team. He legitimately could against this team, so that makes him a tournament guy. Well, Brookie Lopez at 6,000, again, putting up good numbers, a great opportunity for him. I think this is a decent spot. If you're ever going to use Brooke Lopez, this is it, and then he'll probably play 17 minutes and make me look dumber than usual. On to DraftKings. For cash, Euless at 42, the Hitman at 47, and for tournaments, Joshy Gray at 32. I really like that for Gray there, some good upside. Brookie Lopez at 51. I could even see Brook as a cash guy, to be honest, if you have a level of confidence. Well, Randall at 68, a much more palatable price than how he sits over on FanDuel. The last game of the night, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are favored by 10, and the total is a monster, 230. David West is likely back. He's not on the injury report. He missed the last couple of games due to personal reasons. At point guard, Steph's at 97, cash, bang, tournament, yes. Russ at 11.8, cash, bang, tournament, yes. I like both of these guys. You can stack them against each other in tournaments and in cash. They are both really, really strong options. Their backups, Ray Felton and Sean Livingston? Yeah, probably not. At shooting guard, Klay Thompson. Not really interested in Klay. He's been better lately, a 33 average over the last five, which is fine for what it is. Very little tournament upside and a little bit... Oh, that's not true. He does have high tournament upside, but not really doing it this year. And the floor, it's not ideal for me to look at in cash. There are better guys out there. Alex Abrines is getting more minutes. Not doing a huge amount with him. It's not really translating to DFS value, so I think that he is someone to steer clear of. Uncle P, Terrence Ferguson, Pat McCaw, nah. Small forward, Iguodala, no. Kevin Durant, much like Steph, I like the spot here. 10-7. This is got 50 written all over it here for Durant, so I like that. Paulie George at 8,000. There's no bad reason for using Paul George. I think he is absolutely in play here. I don't love it, but it's fine. Draymond's at 8,000. Has struggled against the Thunder in the past, but I actually don't mind this spot here for him. I think that this is decent cash value for Draymond. West, Mello, Jeremy Grant, Kevin Looney, Pat Patterson. I don't like any of those guys. And at center, Steve-O Adams at 7,000. Centers against the Warriors. This bloke averages 20 in the last three against the Warriors. That is fade territory for me. On DraftKings, I like Russ. I like KD. 11.5 for Russ. 9.8 for Durant. 9.6 for Steph. All of those are cash options. Paulie George at 6.79 is all right. Again, very similar to how it looks over on FanDuel. Let's wrap this up. We'll go through some options on Yahoo for tournaments. Looking at Dwayne Wade, the Blue Swimmer, Alan Crabb, Mo Spates, Channing Frye, Freddie Van Vliet, Zaza Pachulia, and for cash and tournaments, Sterlo Brown, Tyson Chandler, Koch, DeLon Wright, Thomas Satoransky, Dylan Brooks, Brooksy, Andy Harrison, Josh the Hitman Hart, Tyler Ulis, Jarrett Allen, Brookie Lopez, Mario Hezonja, Clint Capella, Marc Gasol, Joel Embiid, and Kevin Durant. On Moneyball for tornos, we're looking at Lord Alfred, Kyle Lowry, Brandon Ingram, Jordy Clarkson, Serge Ibaka, formerly Mo Spates, Kyle O'Quinn, and for both cash and tournament formats, the Hitman, Tyler Ulis, Joshy Jackson, Jarrett Allen, Brookie Lopez, Mario Hezonja, Eric Bledsoe, Julius Randle, Benny Simmons, Clint Capela, Marc Gasol, Chrissy Paul, and Kevin Durant. And for Moneyball, for Tournois, we have got Tristan Thompson, Mo Spates, Isaiah Thomas, Koch, Julius Randle, Ibaka, Hardaway, Sterlo Brown, Brooke Lopez, Marquise Chris, Lord Alfred Payton. And for cash, Markieff, Eric Bledsoe, Joel Embiid, Durant, Damari, Capela, Valanciunas, Gasol, Steph, The Hitman, Jared Allen, Tyler Ulis, and Mario Hezonja. If you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go and give me a 5-star review. You can say whatever you want about my hairline. You can say whatever you want about my beard. I don't care. Just give that 5-star review. You can also find this podcast on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, and on Spotify and on YouTube, where you can leave a comment, you can give it a thumbs up, and you can subscribe. Make sure you're checking out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network on Twitter at LockedOnNBAnet. I am Josh Lloyd, the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster. Our Twitter account over there is at BaskMonster. Go and follow me there. Follow me on Twitter at RedRock_Bball. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Eric Griffin.